Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. Welcome to the 2016 Fabian New Year Conference. My name's Andrew Harrop. I'm the General Secretary of the Fabian Society. And this is our largest Fabian event since we've been keeping records. I'm delighted to open... applause to start the day. I'm delighted... I'm delighted to open our doors to so many of you here today, old friends and new, and I really hope you enjoy the event. A year is an eternity in politics. When I welcomed Ed Miliband to this stage 12 months ago, who could have predicted the lineup we'd bring you today? Or what would have happened to the British left in the meantime? A spirited election campaign, but a devastating loss. Without pause, a leadership contest like none we've known, Jeremy's extraordinary election, and then a stunned 4 months where Labour's conversation has been about itself, not the country. I hope today marks a turning point where the left starts to look to the future and forge a new vision of radical government for the 2020s. That's why we've called the conference Facing the Future. Labour can be radical, credible, and electable if it sets out to understand the fast-changing Britain it will seek to govern in the 2020s. And if each wing of the party sets aside old certainties and develops new answers. If we bring together the best of all the Labour traditions to challenge our analysis, assumptions, and solutions. Over the last year, the Fabians have helped the left start on that journey. In our reports, we have set the agenda on ending food poverty and on reforming taxation, on democratic public services, and on the horrifying prospects for poverty and inequality in the 2020s. And in our latest project, we're asking fundamental questions about the future of social security, because the choices we make about tax and spend are as important for reducing inequality as how we regulate markets, which I know Jeremy will be talking about later. The Fabian Society is in good health. As well as our research, we have a thriving volunteer-led programme. We're financially stable, and like the party, we've seen our membership surge. Now well over 7,000 members, the largest number in our long history. The Fabians are about radical possibilities for the future. But it's also our job to hold up a mirror to the left. And for the team at Petit France, the most discomforting part of the last year has been our recent electoral research. We published the 2015 verdict of candidates in the English key seats, and we showed how Labour's defeat turned on a collapse in the support of the party received from older voters. Worse, we revealed the mountain that Labour has to climb to win in 2020, winning back over 100 marginal seats and 40% of the vote. I wrote this week on Labour List that you can complete any journey by taking small steps in the right direction. And while the end point of outright victory feels distant today, in 2016, Labour can start on its journey at the vital elections in May in every corner of the country by re-earning the confidence and trust of our current and recent supporters. We can elect Sadiq Khan, London Mayor, and Carwin Jones, First Minister. We can win new council seats, and we can start the slow process of rebuilding trust and connections in Scotland. But to do that, 2016 must be the year when we look outward to the 9 million people who voted Labour at the last election, not inward to ourselves. Labour must be the listening party that takes as much account of what its voters say on the doorstep as the passionate beliefs of its activists. It must be a year of fundamental policy debate, but also practical, hard-headed campaigning for Labour and for stronger in Europe. To help us make that happen today, we have a fantastic lineup of speakers, politicians, experts, commentators, and above all, Labour's new leader, Jeremy Corbyn. This is the third time I've welcomed Jeremy to a Fabian platform. Last summer, we hosted him at his first appearance at a leadership hustings. He went down a storm. In fact, from that moment, it was clear he could win. Before that, in 2011, Jeremy was the dissenting voice at a Fabian debate on the Libya bombing. He was proved more right than his opponents that day, and he may well be on Syria too. But we must not forget that standing aside is not always cost-free, and that in the past, Labour governments have done good through intervention from Korea to Kosovo. On this third outing, I'm delighted that Jeremy will turn to domestic policy to hold this blinkered, polarising, mean-spirited government to account. Today, he will speak about inequality, the defining obsession of Fabians for over 100 years. And I know from reading the press today that Labour members, in all their diversity, will be able to get behind the challenge he will lay down, uniting as a party behind its leader. Today's conference is jointly organised with the Foundation for European Progressive Studies, our EU-wide sister body. I thank them again for their continuing commitment to UK debate in this vital year for Britain's place in Europe. After Jeremy's keynote address, we'll go straight into plenary debate on the art of effective opposition. Then we'll break into parallel sessions, each open on a first-come, first-served basis. Over lunch, you can nip out in the bracing cold air or munch your sandwiches over one of our three fringe events, including a session with Steek Khan. Then in the afternoon, we're back into the parallel sessions, and there's one on the future of public services, which is delegate-led small group discussions. Finally, we're back here for the closing plenary on the left in the 2020s. And if you're still standing after all that, we would love you to join us for a drink at the end of the day. We've reserved the upstairs bar of the Marquis Cornwallis pub for all delegates. We'd also love you to participate online as well as in person. The details of the Wi-Fi are behind me on the slide. It's a bit of a hassle. You've got to log in and create an account, but I hope you make it. And the hashtag is Fab16. If the fire alarm goes, you follow the exit sides, we leave up the stairs, and then assemble in Woburn Square. And if there's anything else you need, we have loads of stewards all over the conference wearing Fabian lanyards. Now, to kick off a brilliant day, it gives me huge pleasure to welcome our first politician to the stage, the chair of the Fabian Society and shadow chief secretary to the Treasury. Please join me in welcoming Seema Malhotra.
Many thanks, Andrew, and may I start by thanking you and all your team for organising today's conference. A truly flagship political event, and I am sure the whole conference will want to join me in appreciation. And on behalf of the Executive Committee of the Fabian Society, I extend a very warm welcome to you all here today, to what I believe will be a landmark on our journey to 2020. Many of you here today will be members of the Fabian Society, but many of you will also be joining us at annual conference for the first time. We are a society of over 7,000 members, including hundreds of current, past, and future members of Parliament. Founded in 1884, we, alongside the trade unions, the co-op movement and others, helped found the Labour Party. And this conference illustrates our pride in that relationship, which continues to go from strength to strength. Our vibrant voluntary section is unique in today's think tank world. Our 60-plus local societies across the country, supported by Deborah Stoat, the Fabian Women's Network, now 11 years old, and led by Ivana Bartoletti. The Young Fabians, led by Martin Edebor, and their fantastic executive committees. They promote debate and dialogue across the country, and I want to thank each and every one of them for the work they do that takes the contribution of the Fabian Society out into our communities. And I am also incredibly proud that the Fabian Women's Network will be launching its second report into our political education and mentoring scheme, Footprints in the Sand, in Parliament on Tuesday, a scheme that has already gained national recognition and indeed international interest after just 5 years. So if you aren't a member of the Fabian Society already, let me invite you to join today. I joined the Fabian Society as a young Fabian, just as Labour was coming to power, and I have not looked back since. It's a network of friendship, intellectual curiosity, and opportunity through which I have grown, having started out with no background or connection in politics, to becoming a Labour and Cooperative Member of Parliament, and to be serving today in our Shadow Cabinet as Shadow Chief Secretary to the Treasury. Now, last year, when I addressed the Fabian Conference, we were looking forward with cautious optimism to the general election. The result, when it came, heralded by that exit poll, was a terrible shock. Not only did we lose, but the Tories won an overall majority, albeit with fewer than one in four of the electorate supporting them. Since then, Cameron and Osborne have embarked on a punitive and deeply partisan programme. On the progress we made in public services, early intervention, education, housing, public health, regeneration, they are moving the clock backwards. Wherever you look, you can see them hurting and not helping British families and businesses. The autumn statement, the spending review, show George Osborne's poor economic judgment and how it is putting our future economic prospects at risk and storing up problems for the future. Here are the facts about the economy today. This is the slowest recovery in living memory. Earnings growth forecasts are being revised down. Productivity has been revised down next year, the year after, and the year after that. The gap between UK productivity and the rest of the G7 is now the widest gap since 1991. And something I find particularly shocking, that 81% of the savings made to the Treasury through tax and benefits changes since 2010 have come from the pockets of women. On tax credits, where his policies were set to see over 3 million families lose an average of £1,300 from April this year, we took the fight to Osborne and we forced his hand. But now we know that his U-turn was just further cuts to working families, delayed and disguised. And that's why it's important for us to keep taking the fight to the Tories. And just in the last 2 weeks, in Prime Minister's questions, we have watched as Jeremy Corbyn has forensically taken apart the Tory record on flood defences and housing. Their policies set to sound the death knell of social housing. We saw the typical Cameron bluster that we get when he's losing the argument. And this week we've also seen Heidi Alexander show the number of people waiting for more than 4 hours in hospital A&Es has trebled since David Cameron became Prime Minister. And Lisa Nandy has shown how cuts to support for investment in solar power is cutting Britain out of the industries of the future and is now set to result in 18,000 job losses. Cuts today that will result in costs tomorrow. Classic George Osborne false economies. And so when we look to what is at stake, We know it's the future of Britain. The welfare of hardworking individuals and families who today are struggling to make ends meet or to invest in their children's future. And over 500,000 children have been pushed into absolute poverty since Cameron came to office. A record of shame, while at the same time they propose inheritance tax cuts for the wealthy few. Opposing the Tories, yes, it's a key part of what we do. But we also need to come up with convincing answers to some of the big challenges. And that conference is what today is all about. For over 130 years, the Fabian Society has generated the best of research and made the link between ideas and organization, between intellect and action. The Fabians founded the London School of Economics. We invented the idea of the National Health Service. We pioneered comprehensive education and the idea of the United Nations. From the welfare state to the NHS, from the role of women to Britain's place in the world, we have sought to challenge the conventions and assumptions of each generation and make the world a better place for the next. And we continue to lead the way. Our theme today, Facing the Future, tackles head-on the big questions that we face. We have an incredible lineup of speakers and seminars. Tackling head-on those big issues and the development of Labour's policy offer for the next election. And so I'm delighted to start off our conference. It gives me great pleasure to introduce the leader of the Labour Party, the Right Honourable Jeremy Corbyn, MP.
Well, friends, thank you very much for that very warm welcome. And Seema, thank you very much for your introduction. Seema is a fantastic member of our team and our shadow cabinet and fantastic MP for her area. I also want to thank Andrew for inviting me here today. And he said that the speech you're doing relates totally to the core of what the Fabian Society is about on fairness and justice in our society. And since the first hustings of the leadership campaign took place in this very room, I believe, in a very hot day in the summer, and a lot has changed since then. And I thank the Fabian Society for setting up the first hustings of the leadership campaign. Thank you very much for that. And also, thank you to the Fabian Society for over a very long period of time providing a space for debate, for openness, for opportunities to discuss different ideas and ways in which we can aspire to government in the future, but above all, change the terms of public debate within our society. And that is something that has certainly happened over the last few weeks. And I want that change of the terms of debate to continue so that we do all aspire together for a different and better, more equal society with real opportunities for everybody, not just a few. That is absolutely the core of what I believe in and why I believe I was given this responsibility to lead the Labour Party, and that is what I intend to deliver. The absence of fairness and the wish for more of it is what drives us into political activity. We want a fair treatment for all, a fairer society, and a fairer world. Fairness is easy to claim, but hard to deliver. David Cameron makes the argument that cuts, and there are huge cuts being made at the moment, are fair, and I've heard him say this so many times, because it's not fair to burden future generations with debt. Superficially, this is a very compelling argument. But I ask the question, how is cutting investment and opportunities for tomorrow's generation fair? It's absolutely not. It's deeply unfair. And today's young people are already paying that price. Think through this. The maintenance grant for university is being abolished. Our Shadow Chancellor, John McDonnell, showed our opposition to this by joining students in a demonstration against it. Nurses' bursaries are being cut, and Heidi Alexander, our Shadow Health Minister, was on the demonstration last week showing our support for the nurses in their hour of need and their wish to become qualified nurses serving in our National Health Service and helping everyone in the community. Housing is becoming less affordable, whether you're a renter or a buyer, and there's a massive housing crisis in this country that is deeply unfair. The most needy, the poorest, the most vulnerable are hit the hardest, but it extends throughout our society. David Cameron is burdening today's young adults with more debt than ever through the university funding system and many other things, shackling them with a lifelong fetter on their ability to live independently, to rent or buy their own home, or even to start a family. They don't believe it's fair. But many people believe the economic crash means cuts have to be made. Again, not fair, but necessary. That is the argument. That is our failure. Our failure to offer a convincing alternative to people who already agreed with us that it isn't fair. How was it that we couldn't make a convincing case that fairness was necessary? And that is what we have to do. Investing in our future, investing in new infrastructure, industries, and jobs is guaranteeing fairness. Investing in housing, new railways, new digital infrastructure creates jobs and creates a social and economic return. Cutting investment, as this government has done, cuts opportunity and cuts fairness. Fairness isn't just an abstract morality that we claim. It's something we together, as Labour, have delivered over decades in Britain. Labour governments only became possible, and we need to think about the history of this, when everyone had the vote, men and women, working class as well as the property class. It was the Labour movement, the trade unions, the suffragettes, and our party that campaigned for that to happen. Universal suffrage is inherently fair, and we used its electoral force to create a fairer Britain. Like a former member of the Fabian Society, the late Tony Benn said, democracy transferred power from the wallet to the ballot. What people couldn't afford for themselves, they could vote for instead. We're the party that created the institutions that have done so much to build a fairer and more equal society in Britain. We founded the National Health Service, established the safety net of social security under threat at the present time. We implemented, crucially, comprehensive education. We built council housing. We created the Open University. We instituted the Human Rights Act and the Equalities Act and the minimum wage. And we're the party founded by the trade unions and organisations that deliver fairness in the workplace. Anyone can wrap their policies in the language of fairness. Only Labour has delivered it through institutions and laws. And we need to be proud of the achievements that we've made in so many areas. But today, Britain built by Labour, with its fairness inherently in it, is under attack. And we have to find new ways to institutionalise fairness into our society again. Now, the very basis on which we secured those victories, the vote, is under attack. Think about this very carefully. Having narrowly won the general election, with only 24% of the electorate supporting them, the Tories are now trying to rig the system to keep themselves in power and to weaken the opposition inside and outside Parliament. Last year, they drove through a new voter registration scheme that will slash the number of young and inner city voters. And later in this Parliament, they will cut the number of parliamentary seats. The Conservatives are gerrymandering the electoral system to benefit themselves. By directly attacking Labour's funding through the trade union bill and cutting the public short money support for opposition parties' research, they're deliberately setting out to constrain democratic accountability. And add to that The gagging law, which was passed in the last parliament, which prevents charities, unions and think tanks from taking part in political debate nearer to election time, silencing those that may wish to present a public debate of a dissenting point of view. Their threats to use the BBC's charter renewal to hack away at its independence. The packing of the House of Lords with Tory peers. Their moves to restrict the powers of local councils. It all adds up to a serious attack on democratic rights and freedoms. Theirs is the party funded by hedge funds, backed by press owned by multimillionaires and even billionaire tax avoidance. Their concept of fairness is a very different order to ours. Fairness for only a few is not fairness, but privilege. Hidden among the fake concerns of balancing the books is the same hoary old Tory ideology to shrink the state, to shrink fairness. Take an example. Look at the floods. Flood defence schemes up and down the country cut back because of a political ideology that says the state must be shrunk. I saw the consequences of this when I went to Leeds and York and Cumberland, many other places. I met the families who had lost their personal possessions. It's not just the big ticket items that people lose in a flood they get upset by. Fridges and washing machines can be replaced. Photos, children's toys, family pets in homes that have now become the foul stench of sewage water polluted by those floods. I met two with the councils who told us about flood defence schemes cancelled and left unfunded. I met brilliant people in the Environment Agency who complained about the cuts to their staffing and their difficulties in delivering the service they want to deliver. I met with Fire and Rescue Service personnel whose numbers have been cut and who still don't have a statutory responsibility for floods that would mean they would have the necessary equipment and kit to better respond. These are serious issues of unfairness that reach into everybody's lives every day of the week. Just because the Tories are running the state into the ground, don't think it's our public services that are the problem. This is the same Tory strategy. They did it with the railways. Underfund it, make cuts, run the service down, then offer up privatisation as a solution. It's cynical, dishonest, and unfair. It's not just... It's not just public services, though. They see only a limited role for the state because they want fairness limited too. Their laissez-faire attitude, for example, to the steel industry, could let a downturn become a death spiral in that sector, while other governments across Europe have acted to protect their industry. The Tories let ours close, let the jobs go, and are letting the communities suffer. It's not the Labour way. I raised the issue of the steel industry with the Prime Minister, raised it with the Chinese President and Chinese ministers and diplomats on the issues of steel dumping. We, the Labour Party, brought together the industry, unions, MPs and communities to try and find a solution. I visited Scunthorpe, a proud town producing steel. People who want to work and know how vital the industry is to their town's prosperity. They want to contribute to industrial growth and regeneration in Britain. It's the Tories that are letting that town be so brutally assaulted with the destruction of part of its steel industry. Look across Europe, and the support was there. In some cases, they took their plant into public ownership to protect it as a vital industry. They offered schemes to help with energy costs, and they have an industrial strategy and a procurement strategy. They don't let whole regions sink into decline, which is what this government is doing with the steel towns across England, Wales, and Scotland. Across Europe, too, other countries' investment in renewable energy leaves Britain languishing as one of the dirtiest and most polluting countries on this continent. This government is failing to invest in our energy sources. Its reckless negligence has seen the UK solar industry diminished. What is even more unfair is the inheritance it leaves to our children. A polluted environment, a country without long-term energy security. That too is not the Labour way. So we are determined to build alliances across Europe. for progressive reform to ensure that European Union always works in the people's interests. Labour backs continued EU membership as the best framework for trade and cooperation in this century, along with, and this is crucial, the protection of human rights through the European Convention of Human Rights and the European Court of Human Rights as part of that human rights narrative and agenda that we are so closely wedded to in this party. But we need to make decision-making more accountable to its people, put jobs and growth at the heart of a European policy, strengthening workers' rights in a real social Europe, and ending the pressure to privatise public services which has sometimes come from the European Union. We want a continent of solidarity that works together to address climate change, that doesn't pull up the drawbridge on the free movement of people, that acts together to tackle the refugee crisis and the causes of refugees. And today, we send out a message of support to those people living in those disgusting camps in Calais, that they are humans too, and we must reach out to them and support them. That's the Europe that is possible and that Labour works to deliver. Last month, I met sister parties to start building those working relationships. So, a fairer society, whether in Britain or in Europe, can only be built by working together and by enshrining fairness through institutions and laws. This is about transforming our principles into practical policies. What Labour has done when it has been successful, it's guided by that practical fairness that Labour must move forward together. I want to set out some of the ideas under discussion that we're having at the present time. Policies to institutionalise fairness in Britain again. So, we are committed to a publicly owned railway that brings down fares and gets investment in a modern railway system, which would be governed not remotely by Whitehall, but by passengers, rail workers, and local and national politicians. To democratic control of energy, not as an end in itself, but to bring down costs and to transition to carbon-free energy in the future. Do you know, for example, that half of German energy suppliers are owned by local authorities, communities, and small businesses? There are now over 180 German towns and cities taking over their local electricity grids, selling themselves cleaner and cheaper electricity they increasingly produce for themselves. That's something we as Labour should want to emulate. The most innovative Labour councils are already starting to do so. Because I do see properly funded local government as an energy for change, an energy for growth, and an energy for innovation at its very best. We also need to integrate health and social care, recognising if you cut social care, as this government has done and is doing, then it has a negative impact on the NHS, with fewer beds available, longer waits at the A&E department, and the unfairness of many people in desperate need being stuck in a hospital bed when they should be being cared for at home or somewhere else other than in a hospital. If we fund prevention fairly through an integrated strategy, we can save money in the long run without undermining fairness. Creating, for example, a lifelong education service so that opportunities available all throughout our lives, recognising that in the modern era, we need to be able to retrain and reskill our workforce as technology evolves and industry changes, and give everyone the opportunity for learning for itself, because that is what they want to do in adult education and so many other places. We were built as a movement valuing the opportunities for learning and education on the basis that everybody has ideas, everybody has imagination. They just need to be unlocked. This is in such sharp contrast to this government's unfair slashing of college funding and the adult education budget. We are going to continue to oppose them on that. Universal childcare is so important, so that we build on the great Labour legacy of Sure Start and the 15 hours free childcare that has supported so many young parents into work, and providing really high quality childcare so that all children have the best start in life. Too often, inequality begins in the nursery. It should not begin in the nursery. Every child should have reasonable and equal opportunity to preschool education and preschool opportunities. That surely is something we can all agree upon. In workplaces too, we have to ensure that fairness is hardwired. Think of the scandal of Sports Direct that has totally shocked people. So as well as repealing the Tory Trade Union Act when it becomes law, we need a set of rights for all workers from day one to stop exploitation. It was a founder of the Fabian Society, Beatrice Webb, who actually coined the term collective bargaining for the first time, recognising that together we bargain, alone we beg. That is the strength of collective endeavour. And we have set up a commission on looking at workers' rights, which Ian Lavery is chairing at the present time. But we need to go beyond that and ensure that everyone benefits when companies succeed. One proposal is pay ratios between the top and bottom, so the rewards don't just accrue to those at the top. Of the G7 nations, only the United States has greater income inequality than Britain. Pay inequality on this scale is neither necessary nor inevitable. So another proposal would be to bar or restrict companies from distributing dividends until they pay all their workers the living wage. Only profitable employers will be paying dividends. If they depend on cheap labour on those profits, then I think there is a question over whether this is a business model to which we should be turning a blind eye. Too much of the proceeds of growth have accumulated to those at the top. Not only is it unfair, it actually holds back growth, as an OECD research work has found out. A more equal society is not only fairer, it does better in terms of economic stability and wealth creation. And a large-scale house building program, recognizing the housing crisis, as I mentioned earlier, has been so recklessly exacerbated by this government. We need homes that are for families and people to live in, not for investment portfolios. Our country cannot succeed unless everyone can live together in our towns and cities. The cleaner and the city trader, the carer and the chief executive. A new generation of council housing delivered by councils able to borrow prudentially to build those homes. These are vital things. Now, what I've said are suggestions. You, members of this society, the Labour Party, members, affiliates and supporters in this hall and way beyond. You will decide what our policies are. Policies made by small cliques in small rooms often only bring, sadly, very small returns. The passion to change things, to make things better, is what drives us all. Labour needs to hear from those who are fired by that passion. Ed Miliband expanded the vote to elect the leader, empowering members and supporters. I, in return, want to do the same with our policy making. We all have ideas. We all have a vision of a fairer Britain and a fairer world. Labour will be stronger and more in touch with our communities when it hears from its greatest strength, the greatest strength that our members, our supporters, our affiliates, our friends, our people in the community that want to give us their imagination and their advice. Unlock that potential. Our party is changing. Our membership has doubled since the defeat in May. Our party is in a process of regenerating, a a difficult process of adjustment for all of us at times, but a huge opportunity to breathe life into all sections of the party and draw on the collective wisdom of all. Only Labour can offer a vision of a fairer Britain. Let's work together to create and deliver that fairer Britain that has inspired so many of many generations of what human potential can be unlocked, to unlock the human potential of the future. That is the strength of our collective endeavour. That's the strength of our party and our movement. I thank you very much for inviting me here today.
We're going to move straight on to the next session. Please stay in your seats while we just do 1 minute of rearranging, and then we'll be into the first plenary debate. So 1 minute's time.